This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleOmics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Warren, Rhode Island, where today is Sunday, August 15th, 2021. And today on the program, we will discuss TV ratings. AEW Rampage just happened Friday night. SmackDown happened that night, too. We don't have real numbers yet, but we'll talk about what the real numbers might be. The controversy surrounding the SmackDown number. We have live events to go through to discuss what the... I think we're on the fourth week of the return to touring. The follow-up of the latest turmoil as it relates to WWE developmental and NXT. The roads to the top reality show debuts on Dynamite next month. Heels debuts tonight as we record this. And something big, something big might be happening this coming Friday for the second episode of Rampage. All that and more today on the program. But first... joining us to my God, I've got to recalculate and recalibrate my cardinal directions. Coming to you from my south by southeast, from South Buffalo, he is everyone's favorite ring announcer. He is an independent wrestling historian. He is clean shaven today. The one and only Chris Jello. do you remember my Chris Jello impressions I used to do in the mic test? Yes. Then anyway, Chris Gullo joins us to discuss all the latest professional wrestling business news.
Hello, yeah, Chris Gullo. I'm clean shaven. I'm rebooting the beard since I don't have a booking for 3 weeks, so figured I'd shave off and reboot it.
Yes. What have you been up to this in this time since we talked last, Chris Gullo?
It's been a very quiet weekend. I mean, I did some stand-up comedy on Friday evening, and
you went head to head with AEW Rampage. I heard.
Well, technically no, because I went on stage before 10 o'clock. I was head to head with the second hour SmackDown. Okay,
so you are part of the pro AEW co-opted media here. You were doing what you could to take a bite out of the WWE competition that people just keep comparing AEW to WWE for some reason. I am here in Rhode Island this weekend for a wedding. At this is a social gathering. Yes, social gatherings tend to be difficult. People are being very nice and understanding to me, though. Everyone is now out on a boat somewhere. They've left me in this house all by myself. I am now in a closet that is bigger than some people's homes, probably. I'm in some, I don't know, very well-to-do, like, we're near Providence. I don't know.
Is it an Airbnb or someone in the family's house?
No, this is girlfriend's family's house. Yeah, they're doing all right, let's say. And now they're out on a boat. I am the weird, quiet person who that's my main feature is I have a podcast that I need to do right now. There has been discussion of an upcoming sponsor that we're going to have on the program. And I think next week we will be reading for that sponsor, bringing up how niche not just wrestling is, but the business of wrestling. And yes, we do have 180 some odd patrons that actually pay money for this. Yes, I'm a strange artifact of humanity. But anyway, you told me that you're drinking a cucumber watermelon juice.
Yes, from Trader Joe's.
Do we have a Trader Joe's in Buffalo other than the one on Niagara Falls Boulevard and Consumer Hell?
Just the one on Niagara Falls Boulevard, but it's...
So you go from South Buffalo to the Trader Joe's in Amherst?
Well, no, I work in Amherst, so I go after work.
You work... That's right. Okay, we did pick you up at work that one time, and that is pretty close to Trader Joe's. Okay. But what are the highlights in the world of professional wrestling business lately, Chris Gullo?
Well, this was a pretty crazy Friday night. We'll get right into it as we had our first... Friday night, you know, it's not a war because they're not going head-to-head, but, you know, Friday night double feature, you could say, with SmackDown followed by AEW Rampage. And we do have, I believe, a SmackDown overnight, Brandon.
We have a SmackDown overnight. It is exceptionally high. So I've been doing some research. I've been informed by someone who's very familiar with Nielsen ratings. I'm getting my terminology sorted out. I don't know that overnight is the industry preferred standard term for what we're talking about. When we talk about these SmackDown ratings, we're talking about the ratings that we get the following day or morning or early afternoon for what was on broadcast TV. Those, my understanding is, are called fast affiliate ratings. I take it fast affiliates because they come from the local broadcast affiliates for your ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW. No such thing exists for cable ratings. However, one could, if one was so inclined and had lots of money, if you're an enterprise like Turner or NBCU or Fox, you could order what's called a fast national, which may be a term that some people are familiar with or have heard used and possibly misused. So these overnights that we talk about each week for SmackDown are not fast nationals. A fast national is something that someone, usually who's already a Nielsen subscriber, make a request to Nielsen, and it's not free. It's thousands of dollars that they have to pay to make this request to get this information. So say if I'm on Turner and I want to know what the rating was on Saturday for Rampage the night before on Friday, which is quite plausible. But apparently, if they've done that, they haven't put out a press release to publicize what the rating was. But I can pay a few thousand dollars to get the fast national ahead of schedule, if it's important to me, you know, for public relations reasons or something like that. No such thing apparently has happened, or at least if it has happened, there hasn't been a press release put out for Rampage. Maybe that'll happen next week, as perhaps CM Punk is debuted in AEW. But so what we have here, as I get to the point, we have fast affiliates for SmackDown. Now, if we look at the fast affiliate rating, we have it from Spoiler TV, for all the network primetime, airings from 8 to 11. And, what we see here is for SmackDown, it lists 2.575 million viewers for hour one, 2.422 million viewers for hour two. That averages out to, I think, 2.499. So basically 2.5 million viewers for SmackDown is the measurement. Usually the fast affiliate for SmackDown is about 6% lower than the final. Usually SmackDown these days is just over 2 million viewers. This would be a huge rating for SmackDown if SmackDown was watched by 2.5 million viewers, or a little bit more, if the usual discrepancy is applicable. Now, what happened though on Friday night on Fox networks in at least 15 markets, I've been told maybe as many as 18 markets, there was, in fact, NFL preseason games airing on Fox. So I believe what we have here is the 8 to 10 measurement of viewership extrapolated from the fast affiliates onto what the viewing was like on Fox from 8 to 10. Much of this viewing, though, is not for SmackDown, but for NFL games. So the Bills played the Lions, and the Titans played the Falcons, I think, on various Fox affiliates. I've tweeted some information about this if you want to read it over for yourself. I understand Dave Meltzer is embroiled in controversy with people on Twitter, as he's downplaying, and I'm downplaying, the likelihood that this is reflective of the real rating for SmackDown. On Monday, we will get the final rating. We'll get the final rating for Rampage as well. I expect it to be, if anything, maybe a little bit lower than usual for SmackDown, just by virtue of the preemptions that various Fox affiliates faced. SmackDown, I understand, did air at midnight or sometime after the NFL game in some of the markets where it was preempted. The Nielsen final should aggregate all of that SmackDown viewing and sort that into one. So there's nothing really being missed. But then again, you know, the viewership preempted to midnight is going to be substantially lower in that market than it would be if it aired in the normal time slot. So I would expect a number around 2 million, pretty close to 2 million when we see the final on Monday. I will probably be the person to report this. I've already been thinking ahead. I'm leaving. I'm starting to drive home tomorrow, and I'm going to have to like pull over at a rest stop at like 4 p.m. Eastern and do some reporting from a rest stop or something on the Interstate 90. So look forward to that. I'm sure there's going to be tremendous reaction, at least on Twitter, among some readers for the Rampage number, whatever that's going to be. I guess we could talk about this, quickly. I have, this is not in your slides, Gullo, but, if you look at our OBS virtual camera, for what it's worth, and I don't know how to gauge this, what it really is worth, but the Google web search for the profile All Elite Wrestling, which encompasses a lot of related searches that Google and its algorithmic wisdom determines to be related to All Elite Wrestling. Through Google Trends, we get an index. We don't get real units of measurement. We get an index relative to the peak within the timeline that you're looking at. So I looked at the past 7 days, which would include, Friday, and it includes Wednesday and, the seven days before Sunday as we record today. So anyway, we get the peak for All Elite Wrestling related Google web search, both U.S. and, United States, or both United States and worldwide, is at 10 p.m. Eastern, on Friday. So Google web search peaked well above on Friday, relative to what it did on Wednesday. Suffice to say, there was more Googling related to AEW happening on Friday night than there was on Wednesday night, for whatever that means. That's at least encouraging of the notion of a high rating for Rampage. If the roles were reversed and the Wednesday night Googling was higher than the Friday night Googling, I would think that, well, definitely the Dynamite rating is higher than the Rampage rating. The Dynamite rating may still be higher than the Rampage rating. I'm not really sure what this means, but it's at least, it's supportive of some optimism at a minimum. The predictions that I have made and that we have made on this program, I think we made some predictions last week of around, 670,000 viewers or something like that. I think we did. I think I just took the 1 hour Friday Dynamites and I multiplied it by 1.2, basically assuming a 20% jump on those numbers. This situation will be benefited too in terms of it wasn't faced by NBA playoffs competition like, the Friday Night Dynamites were. But, we will see. I would think anything, if it is over 700,000, that would be quite impressive. Obviously, it would be very newsworthy if this did a Dynamite like number at 10 o'clock. If it did, let's say 800 or 900,000 viewers, I would be shocked if it did a million, but, I would expect.
Go ahead.
I would be shocked.
I was just saying.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was just saying that I'm really interested in the quarter hours on this when it comes out because they did almost a Saturday Night Main Event style where they led off with really would be the marquee matchup of Kenny Omega versus Christian for the Impact World title. So I thought that was interesting and I thought it was a good booking choice to start off with the marquee match because as we know, Saturday Night Main Event used to do that back in the 80s. Where they'd start with the marquee match, so.
Yeah. You're reminding me that I'm probably going to have to deal with quarter hours, too. On late Monday night, maybe. Maybe I'll see the quarter hours. Yeah, that's interesting. Because usually, so what's been happening lately is that, the Observer has always gotten the quarter hours, and have often, almost always been the first report of the quarter hours on occasion, and especially lately, I've been able to get the quarter hours out there first, but we'll see if I'm able to obtain them. The Observer, as many people know, comes out very early Friday, so obviously the Observer won't be coming out until much later in the week. So who knows what will be possible in the world of wrestling journalism, but I will do my best. So there's that. I guess you think maybe. Does the Omega and Christian match do better? Yeah, and as time goes on later into the night, especially when it's that late, the segments that are later in the program are probably at a disadvantage in terms of just people turning the TV off and going to sleep. But it'd be interesting to see if the Britt Baker and Red Velvet match did close, equal, or better than that opening match. I guess it's kind of what you're getting at there, maybe. Or it's but that's what
yeah. I'm really interested because you know with a show that late, you know, viewership tends to decline later as the hour goes on.
Yeah, which is an excuse that we never make for Raw, do we? Is that oh the third hour drop was tremendous and the show is supposed to build, so maybe we should balance that when we talk about you know the 3 hour Raw that is you know going from the third hour going from 10 to 11, but yeah. As I'm sure people know, we're not going to review Rampage here, but Britt Baker going over strong in her hometown of Pittsburgh. An interesting creative choice on the part of AEW to put someone over in their hometown on a 1 hour show. I don't know what the challenge is of that, pal, but you know, if you're not going to tear somebody down to build them back up and only do a 1 hour show instead of a 3 hour show, I don't really see what the challenge is in that. But nonetheless. That is what AEW
and use it to debut to somebody too. How dare they?
You talking about Jamie Hayter's debut?
Yeah. Yes. Well, technically a re-debut because I know she returned her back in the beginning, but yeah.
Yeah. In any event, not to jump ahead, I guess, and we do have this on the slides here. I don't know that the video is going to end up being used here, but yeah, we have, I believe this is from 406sports.com where we have various markets that preempted SmackDown on Fox. As you would imagine, it's a lot of Tennessee, Georgia, and Michigan. Here in Buffalo, or not here in Buffalo, but there in Buffalo where you are, it was on the CBS affiliate, our Channel 4. So, but anyway, more ratings, I guess?
Yeah, real quick, though, just to touch on that, you know, you'll hear some people say, oh, it's just the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just preseason or whatever. So the Hall of Fame game, which is a preseason game that aired not this past Thursday, but the Thursday before, I think it did 7.3 million viewers on Fox. Now, the week after the Field of Dreams game did about...
That's a baseball game.
Yeah, did about 5.7, so...
Okay. And I heard the Hall of Fame ceremony itself did better than usual in prior years for the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I don't know.
Peyton Manning's induction, but people were telling me, you know. And I was responding to that by saying, well, the numbers were up because Peyton Manning, how tall is Peyton Manning? He's 6'5".
Hell yeah.
Proving once again that tall people are a draw in this business. In any event.
All right. Speaking of this business, we'll touch on the SmackDown the week before Friday, August 6th, 2.169 million with a 0.61 in the 18-49, so up from July 30th, which did a little over 2 million with a 0.57 in the 18-49. So a little increase for SmackDown there prior to the week before.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, yeah, that's. A very old rating at this point, so we don't need to get into that.
Monday Night Raw on August 9th doing 1.790 million with a 0.49 in the 18-49. Very slightly down from August 2nd, which did 1.8 in the 18-49. I'm sorry, 1.8 overall. And in the 18-49, they did 0.51.
Yeah, and do we have here in our slides the year-over-year comp? We do. So if I jump to Raw, maybe we can do this for SmackDown, too. But we're still, Raw's still doing above. Now I'm looking at total viewership, and I imagine Key Demo is similar. But Raw's still doing a level above where it was doing the year before. SmackDown, still doing a little bit better relative to Raw than it was the year before. We're coming up, though, on year-over-year comps to the Thunderdome era. We are still in year-over-year comps on the PC era, believe it or not. A year ago, we were at the tail end of the PC era. And we are still in a sequential comparison. Raw and SmackDown are doing considerably better than the end of the Thunderdome era. So there are those things. I've been doing lately, Chris Gull, I don't know if you're aware, I've been doing these Thursday evening ratings discussions, so... I don't know what we should do here as far as maybe we should condense these discussions so it's not just redundant things for the listeners. But there you go. Raw and SmackDown are not knocking it out of the park with huge ratings with returned fans, but they're doing better than they were without fans, for sure. You can make a quantitative argument to say that.
All right, we'll move on to Dynamite from Wednesday, August 11th at 979,000. So falling under a million for the first time in a few weeks with a 0.35 in 18 to 49. Compared to the week before, 1.1 million with a 0.46 in the 18 to 49.
Mm-hmm. Dynamite's rating was down. There was no competition now from the Olympics. I guess for all of these programs that we're talking about, the Olympics ended a week ago today. And you would think that this was after a four-week streak with AEW doing over a million viewers total, over 500,000 viewers, 18 and 49, and slipping under both of those milestones this past Wednesday. There's really nothing that's a difference here except for the content.
Wasn't it the return of the challenge?
I'm sorry. Thank you. It was the return of the challenge. AEW ranked, and I think this is information that I didn't know when I did my ratings talk on Thursday night, the return of the challenge was there. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills also beat out Dynamite in the 18 to 49 demo. And you know what else beat out Dynamite in the 18 to 49 demo? Have you read this on my Twitter yet, Glow? Do you know what I'm talking about here?
No, because I mean I saw a lot of chatter about the challenge, but
so the challenge won in the demo on the day for cable. Okay, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills on Bravo. Number two, I mentioned this on Twitter and then had a Bravo fan ask me what the viewership actually was. and I informed this person and it dawned on me, maybe this is my opportunity to pivot into Real Housewives, Twitter, perhaps. In any event, and then two other episodes. So those are cable originals. Those were both first runs for the challenge and for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. AEW ranked number three in terms of cable originals, but number five overall when you include things that are not first run. And do you know what? Take a guess. I'll give you one guess of what these two programs were. They were two episodes of the same series.
The Big Bang Theory.
The Big Bang Theory on TBS had more viewers. These are half-hour episodes, granted. But had more viewers in the 18-49 demo than AEW Dynamite, which, as you can imagine, encouraged some interesting quote tweets. In any event.
All right. And we actually have quarter by quarter breakdowns of this Dynamite rating.
Yeah, we can touch on that. I'm always hesitant to talk in too much of a conclusive manner about what the quarter hours mean, but the peak for total viewership was the main event with Chris Jericho and Wardlow. The peak for 18 to 49 was very close between quarter four, which included the end of Daniel Garcia and Darby Allin. That also included the beginning of the Matt Hardy and Private Party versus Best Friends six-man. So there was that one. That was Q4. But then also Q6 was 1,000 lower than that. At 466,000, the other segment, the other quarter, I should say, was 467,000. But Q6 with 466,000 viewers, that was the Britt Baker live promo with Red Velvet's running. There were some packages for Ricky Starks and Brian Cage's feud, and then there was the beginning of the Good Brothers versus Evil Uno and Stu Grayson match. 18-49 was pretty consistent. There aren't. I'm looking at this on a line chart. Right where the 18-49 is the metric that has the lower numbers, so just visually it looks like there's less volatility here. But even so, the low point was the opening segment with 436,000 viewers, and the high point again was 467. So we're talking about like a 30,000 viewer range here. Total viewership, there were two segments. The main event and the Britt Baker Red Velvet segment that did over a million. I don't see huge takeaways except for to say, you know, Chris Jericho had another strong main event, at least with total viewership. His Nick Gage match and the Dominoes controversy that did well in viewership in real time as well. So that's the quarter hours.
All right, and then I know you also actually prepared some. Chart, more so like a spreadsheet of the quarter to quarter growth and loss of Dynamite, as well as viewer counts in the thousands by quarter.
Yeah, the biggest the quarter that gained the most viewers was the second quarter that had the end of the six-man tag match between the Elite, the Sydal brothers, and Dante Martin. So that had the last 4 minutes of that six-man tag that opened the show. And then it had the angle, the live mic promo angle with Christian Cage and Jurassic Express, as well as a Malakai Black pre-tape that I think actually ended and then finished in the following quarter, or began and then finished in the following quarter. But that had by far the most growth sequentially. It grew. It was the segment, it was the quarter that sequentially saw the most growth over the most demographics. It was the highest growing quarter for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 demographics, including total viewership and 18 to 49. So I think we kind of saw this too in the elimination match a week or two ago, in that if you, they opened the show with a match that ended in the following quarter, and that led to a lot of growth in the following quarter. And the first quarter is always kind of unpredictable and volatile, because you could have a big checkout factor from Q1 to Q2. If the lead-in was really strong or stronger than usual, then you've got a lot of people who aren't necessarily interested in watching AEW who leave the show. Or if you've got, who knows, you've got a weaker than usual lead-in, then you don't start out with a stronger audience, and then you end up maybe gaining from there. And we never get any real data on the lead-in, and they're not cable originals, so their numbers are harder to find anyway. And it's a 7 p.m., you know, whatever the movie is before Dynamite. So that's always an unpredictable factor, and another reason why it's, I think, difficult to analyze and to draw strong conclusions from quarter hours.
All right, and we'll touch on
we do the Impact.
Yeah, that actually went against that Field of Dreams game we talked about before. But yeah, Impact at 122,000 with a .04 in 18-49. Last week, 100,000 even with .04 in 18-49. So
yeah, so 122,000. This is, we had Christian Cage on here on this show, and I believe Kenny Omega as well. This is a better than usual number for Impact. The 18-49 still pretty low. But there was a time, you know, a few months ago where Impact was hovering around 150,000 viewers. So this is still substantially lower than what they were doing a few months ago. If you want to look at what the peak it is that they're possibly capable of, the Kenny Omega episode where he had his first appearance way back in December. If I scroll and scroll and scroll through our WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, the December 8th episode of Impact did 222,000 viewers, so 100,000 more viewers than this episode did at 122,000 viewers. The demos are super volatile because the numbers are so small, so I'm hesitant to do too much thinking about these demos where we've got like 4,000 viewers in 18 to 34, another zero measurement for female viewers, 18 to 34. You know, the demo, not doing great here at 48,000 viewers. That's the equivalent to a .04. But then again, that's within the range of what Impact has been doing for a long time, the key demo. And yet again, on the other hand, we're dealing with, you know, an audience that's measuring under 100,000 viewers in this demo. It's hard to, you know, it's being determined by a Nielsen sample that is, you know, it's smaller, so then the result is going to be more volatile. The total viewership would be less volatile, one would think, because it's by virtue of being a bigger number. And the total viewership over time for Impact has been generally on the decline.
All right. And then I know you kind of did an 18 to 49 graph chart with all five shows. Oh no, we got NXT. Totally forgot about the NXT rating.
Yeah. So NXT did a lot. NXT did a pretty good number. I wonder if it's out of curiosity.
Yeah. 751,000 .19 in 18 to 49. Right. Compared to when they were on Sci-Fi the week before, 520,000 at .10. So, yeah, back in USA, nice jump.
So, they were on Sci-Fi for 2 weeks, and you just kind of throw those numbers away. But the last time they were on USA, which is on July 20th, they did 709,000. The week before that, they did 705,000. So they've been, and well, the week before that, they did 654,000. So this was the biggest NXT number since May 4th. The key demo did did within the range of what they had been doing though the last time they were on USA Network at 244,000 viewers, which is the equivalent of a 0.19 rating. I don't know. I wonder if it's related to the news stories and just people having NXT a little bit more top of mind and checking it out. The younger demos though did exceptionally well for this episode compared to the last time they were on USA. So this week, 105,000 viewers on average between the ages of 18 to 34. The last time they were on USA, 65,000. So again, 105. Last time they were on USA, 65. So almost doubling. I wonder if it's, you know, this is, we're getting into the realm of being tempted to make conclusions, I think. But, I wonder if, you know, if the more news aware wrestling fan tends to be younger and maybe tends to, certainly they tend to consume media in ways that are not measured by linear TV viewership. And then maybe they were just for some reason more compelled to check it out and ended up checking out more, you know, ended up checking out through traditional TV viewership, means rather than, I don't know, other ways, like, you know, it's still on Hulu, right? Or, YouTube clips or whatever, or just, you know, monitoring social media. But it is interesting that, the show did so much better than usual. I have seen quarters, and I think it was pretty consistent across the board, and even saw some growth in the main event related to relative to the rest of the show. So it was not as if people tuned in at the beginning and then checked out. There was some consistency with the viewership. So there's that. We'll see what happens next week if it's just sort of a 1 week check in. I've heard NXT is in turmoil, so I'm going to see what it's like, and maybe people will forget about it as that news story cools off from the top of the mind of wrestling fans.
All right, yeah, like I said, you got these line graphs here with the 18 to 49 viewership live plus same day for all five programs.
Yeah, it's just a line graph. That's just there all for right. Reference. We don't need to discuss it.
Okay, all right. We can move on to live events. And moving on to live events here, as far as the past live events, we'll start with. If you want to break that down, Brandon.
Yeah, I should mention real quickly, too, before we get to AEW and WB, that New Japan had its resurgence show last night, right?
Yes, last night, yep.
For what it's worth, we also had Triple Mania.
Ric Flair on Triple
Ric Flair. Ric Flair giving Kenny Omega chops along with Andrade. But New Japan resurgence in LA, according to WrestleTix, final count. Tickets distributed 2,240 in Los Angeles. So, I don't know. Obviously, the first, this is correct, right? This is the first attended New Japan show in the U.S. since the pandemic, I think. Does that sound right?
Yeah, because they were just doing the New Japan Strong Things closed set.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know what context to put that in. That's probably pretty good for New Japan. That's probably on par with what their lower level shows have been doing in the U.S. I mean, it's much bigger than a Corcoran Hall show, which is just under 2,000. So there's that. And just to double check on what I just said about the NXT quarters, which I have not put out there, and the Observer has not put them out there yet, but let me make sure what I said was true. Show opened with 673,000 viewers. It ended with 755 for the overrun. The final quarter, 9:45 to 10, had 719. Show peaked in the middle at 9 at the top of the hour with 839,000 viewers. This is total, of course. That was also the peak for 1849 at 282. So it started under 700,000, grew to 9 o'clock, fell a little bit toward the main event, and then the overrun, was the third most viewed, fourth most viewed, compared to the quarters. So there's that. But anyway, yeah. Live events. Our chart's a little bit messed up here. I don't have dates on it, but, yeah. So we don't have, unfortunately, don't have cities here. The Pittsburgh Dynamite did over 5,000, 5,015. The Rampage did 5,454. So the Rampage doing slightly better on a Friday night versus a Wednesday night Dynamite. Yeah, and we have weekend a house show. I believe this is Charlotte, 7,524. Pretty good for a house show. SmackDown. Where was SmackDown on Friday night, Gull? Do you know?
Tulsa?
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes.
That's right. That did over 7,000. So the Super Show, the house show in Charlotte, did better than the Tulsa SmackDown. And where was Raw on Monday?
That I don't remember here.
Luckily, I've got my WrestleTix sheet open here, which might scroll and cooperate with me. The Raw was in San Antonio, Texas, and tickets out, 7,230. So I think we're getting into the, you know, I mean, San Antonio is a pretty big market, at least as far as population goes. I'm not sure about its what its heat is like as far as a WWE market, but that's a pretty big market in terms of population. And that did.
This past weekend was the last night was the Charlotte house show where Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks were not there due to unforeseen circumstances. What that means?
Yeah,
no idea. Brody, I know New Japan Pro Wrestling had a similar thing of Brody King too, but
yeah, that who knows what it means, but it leads one to think COVID contact or something. Yes. I had my first COVID test in anticipation of this traveling that I've done here, and I tested negative. I will reassure everyone who's come in contact with me. They'll be reassured to know that I do not have COVID.
Good. So, yeah. It's your first one.
Yeah, I mean, I just never had to be tested, I guess. I never came in contact with anyone who I know of who had COVID. Yeah. You've had COVID tests?
Twice. One to attend the Buffalo Bills playoff game last year.
Oh, yeah.
That was very, very brief, and they didn't seem to really put the swab up much on the nose.
So not a very high-quality COVID test.
I don't think so.
Was it a rapid test?
Yeah. They let you know in, like, I think the next day or whatever. But, yeah, it was a rapid test. And then I did another rapid test when somebody I knew, like, tested positive for COVID, but I was negative on that as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I went through a drive-thru at a Rite Aid, and they gave me a Q-tip. I use that loosely. They gave me, like, a Q-tip with a really long cotton swab at the end, and they had me, like, rotated in each one of my nostrils, and I almost sneezed. And then you put it, like, back in this test tube that has some solution in it, and you cap it off and you give it back to them. Yeah, it took a few days to get the results, but yeah. So I don't know. I've got on my spreadsheet here from WrestleTix that San Antonio did actually 7,230 out. So I will go with that. I think our chart is showing me something different. So there's that. Upcoming events. It's really the same set of events as before. Right, over 14,000 for the United Center on August 20th. That's this coming Friday in Chicago. We're at over 41,000 tickets out for SummerSlam in Las Vegas, August 21st. Wow, that's really coming up. That's like that's next weekend. Newark, New Jersey for AEW Dynamite, September 15th, over 11,000 tickets out. We're just looking at ticket events that have more than 10,000 tickets out. WWE London, which I believe is a Raw taping, September 20th, 14,645 tickets out. Still over 1,000 tickets available for that. And AEW Dynamite in Flushing, New York. Maybe it's Queens. Still nobody's explained to me what the taxonomy is of Flushing, New York and Queens and New York City. But anyway, September 22nd, which will be the most attended AEW live event ever, over 17,000 tickets out. So there's that. Yeah.
All right, so move on to some Triple H conversation.
Yeah. I imagine we'll have something to talk about next week as Triple H will probably have a conference call since we have a takeover coming up on Sunday, right? Because SummerSlam is Saturday. So we'll actually be able to talk on Sunday about SummerSlam that happened the day before next week. But usually on the Thursday before a takeover, there is a Triple H, Paul Levesque, Executive Vice President of Global Strategy and Talent Development, or whatever his title is these days. He will do a conference call with the wrestling media. And I don't know if there's ever been more of an interesting time to have a media conference call with Triple H than this week. I mean, it's not, I don't know that it's official. I've never been included in any of these PR emails that they put out to give people the connection to participate. But it would be unprecedented if there was not a conference call ahead of a takeover. So what do you think people are going to ask him, Chris Gullo?
Well, they're going to ask him about the releases and really his decision and what's the direction in NXT going forward.
Are they going to ask him about, so what's your relationship like these days with Vince McMahon?
Well, yeah, that could be asked because the rumor is he had no idea this was happening.
And how defensive will Paul Levesque get on this conference call? But if we jump ahead a few slides, which is, I probably should have reordered this, but the Wrestling Observer Newsletter this past week reported that even though they were NXT releases, it was Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, and John Laurinaitis who were the ones who decided who would be cut. Those in NXT said not only Paul Levesque, who runs NXT, nor Shawn Michaels have a say in the cuts, but they weren't even aware of them until after Laurinaitis started calling talent to let them know that they were being let go. So, according to the Observer,
you get a lot of questions about that one.
Yeah, why don't you read or summarize the rest of this?
Just continuing, you know, it led to real morale issues in NXT, a division which has not had that problem in the past. It's largely based on what was said to be a new company directive for the product and a behind-the-scenes power struggle, including those who fear for their positions if and when Levesque takes over and thus want to undermine him and those who support Levesque. Since ultimately everything is Vince McMahon's decision, it was surprised since it's been considered a given that Levesque would be running the wrestling end and Nick Khan the business end if something happened to Vince McMahon. Levesque had been thought to be untouchable, but in failing to stop AEW's rise and eventually losing the war, gave both his detractors and those who felt he would replace him the obvious ammunition. The idea was if he was in control and in a fight and his vision for the product failed to attract younger viewers, partially, if not largely, because of going against AEW, NXT was the oldest skewing wrestling show among the major national shows. Within both the television and wrestling business, it was considered a given that with the WWE backing that it would eventually dominate Wednesday, and the opposite happened.
Yeah. So, in the words of Nick Khan, a few things there. There's some real palace intrigue here. I can't imagine that Triple H is pleased. And I imagine if there's a conference call, he's going to downplay whatever's happening here and insinuate that the wrestling media and wrestling fans are just making too big of a deal about things like this as always. But he cannot be happy with what's going on here. He's being undermined in his, at a minimum, his power and influence is being undermined here. If this is true, that he didn't even know about the cuts. And not only wasn't he included in the decisions, but he didn't even know about the cuts until they were actually being made. So there's that. Another thing, the idea that within WWE or within the industry that it was assumed that NXT would almost certainly beat AEW. I think there were people who believed that. I guess I didn't believe that. And I even think about in your brief stint in 2019, Chris Gullo, where we recorded at Grapplers that one night, an episode of WrestleNomics. Yeah. And we discussed, or maybe you came over to my place. But anyway, we discussed, what would be, it was September 2019, and NXT and AEW were about to start going head to head. And we predicted, by December or something like that, a few months into the competition, what would be the leading show. And I think we both predicted AEW. You can see how Vince might be losing some faith in Triple H in that he was unable to overcome, at least in terms of total viewership and the key demo viewership. He was unable to overcome a new startup promotion run by, former members of the Death Valley Driver Video Review Board, Coach Tony Kaye and Mookie Ghana. So, yeah. You could see Kevin Dunn. Kevin Dunn has always been sort of rumored to not be an ally of Triple H and vice versa. I believe Meltzer has said at one point that, you know, the day that, at least this was years ago, he said this, that the, he believed that the day that, that Triple H and Stephanie took over, that that Kevin Dunn would be done away with or something. He would no longer be in the position that he's in, where he is the executive producer and the chief of global TV. And in fact, he's, you know, probably gained even more power recently with the consolidation that W has done on a corporate level, where they've consolidated their media group into their television division, where he's become, you know, I think ultimately the supervisor of two divisions, and we're really three if you include the smaller W Studios group. Those three divisions have been consolidated as new management recognized redundancy in a lot of areas where they felt that there were many people doing the same job that needed to be consolidated into one position. And now Kevin Dunn is the ruler of them all. But yeah, you can see it sounds like, and Triple H can correct us if we're wrong on Thursday, perhaps. But it sounds like there's a lot of infighting and struggle for power within this company that is much wealthier and much more powerful and has much more name ID than AEW. There's an internal power struggle to some degree that you could see how, you know, a Kevin Dunn, who has more of a you know, main roster Vince McMahon view of the business, how he would feel threatened by first of all, somebody who doesn't appear to be his ally, maybe appears to be his enemy, like Paul Levesque, and may not be, you know, incentivized to see NXT succeed, and may be incentivized to see the leadership of NXT, you know, not do well or to undermine them. So, yeah, the more that I see things like this, and the more that I see talent not valued, and we've, you know, as we talked about last week, there's been over 100 wrestlers cut since 2020. And, you know, I think Todd Martin was bringing up the, you know, as an example, Bronson Reed is somebody who was, you know, when he was Jonah Rock on the Indies, somebody who had a lot of potential, pretty young, but hadn't really produced a huge name yet. He was starting to gather a name, but WWE signed him. And now, you know, he spent however long he's been in WWE, a year or more, and now he's got a bigger name. He was a North American champion. He was a pretty pushed wrestler on national TV, on the USA Network, for whatever it's worth, with their smaller viewership. But there's somebody who was pushed on TV, and then they just cut him loose, and you know, they've sort of built somebody up that some other player, maybe AEW, but maybe others, could sign, and it heats somebody up for somebody else to do something with. That's one small drop in a bucket, but you know, WWE doesn't believe they're in the wrestling business, and at least publicly facing, doesn't believe that they're really competing with other wrestling companies who are beneath them. And it just, you know, the longer that this goes on, you know, if Vince stays healthy enough for long enough, he's going to continue to drain this company of its brand value. And, it all hinges on the future of their media rights values, and the future of their media rights values all hinges on a number of factors, including their viewership, including their ad rates, including their ability to be successful with certain synergies, like drawing viewership to other programs like Miz and Mrs. or others, and just what the media executives believe about the future of WWE's brand. I don't know, the media executives are very much in touch, though, which plays into their favor. But yeah, I get a little bit less optimistic and a little bit more pessimistic every week that WWE is eventually, especially if Vince McMahon stays healthy and in power for many years to come, that WWE's, you know, huge leadership in the wrestling space is going to grow smaller over time. And maybe eventually in the US, AEW is going to become the more popular wrestling brand. And we may just be seeing the beginning of this. We'll see what the number is when the number comes out on Monday for Rampage, to see to what extent does AEW have a second brand here, TV brand, to grow. Because that is a huge growth question for their business. Do they have supportive programming here, or do they actually have another brand that is similar in value to Dynamite? Do they have a brand that right now at 10 could do similar viewership to Dynamite? Do they have that, or do they have something that's doing half of that? That's a big question. Is Dynamite something that eventually gets put into a better time slot maybe earlier on Friday, and Lord knows what will happen then. And I think about how, too, WWE just keeps cutting talent. And if I were Tony Khan or AEW, it's like more talent than I can handle right now. Like, you keep putting free agents out here that, like, I don't have the capacity for these people yet. And it makes the notion of another 2-hour show seem more palatable if there's all of this talent that you have to give time to. Don't tell me that the YouTube shows Dark and Dark Elevation are enough. They're not. They're just YouTube shows that are nice for generating some YouTube revenue. And really their larger value is in talent development and giving people reps who don't have the old house show system beneath them. Yeah.
It's their developmental. That's really what Dark and Dark Elevation is for the most part.
And it's probably a more cost effective and more sensible developmental. We could, go on here about how the who knows, and we don't know what the real cost of the performance center is, but it's millions per year to have the output that they've had when the indies, with I think about grapplers, we got pennies on the dollar in terms of our spending compared to what the performance center has put out. And I think we've put out some good wrestlers over the last few years with literally a tiny 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 fraction of the expense and name ID and influence and money. So I think the way that AEW is doing developmental in terms of just having this Dark and Dark Elevation, giving people reps and bringing people in and seeing if you want to work with them in the future and seeing how they do in your environment in a pretty low risk way, as opposed to like signing somebody or not, or doing a tryout, one time with somebody and deciding whether you want to sign them and enter into a long-term relationship with this person or not. Doing Dark and Dark Elevation probably is just a more sensible way of doing things. Will we ever see WWE do something like Dark and Dark Elevation? Will they actually put people who are not under the contract, under exclusive contract to them, on their media platforms? I doubt it, because WWE, there's some arrogance in this idea that we don't want to put somebody who we don't have control over onto our media platforms and give them the rub of being on our media platforms and building their name up, and then somebody else could, pick them up, which sort of flies in the face of this idea that you would build somebody up like Bronson Reed and then just cut them loose, or Mercedes Martinez, and have them on TV, have her on TV all this time, and then just cut her loose, but anyway, yeah.
And so you talk about all this talent, right? And, some of the questions that are being asked out there is, not only would Triple H ever leave, but if he did, would he start his own wrestling company? Before you give your perspective, Brandon, I only could really see him truly leaving if Stephanie didn't. I think that would be if Vince passes away or they sell the company.
Yeah. Have you seen Succession on HBO?
No.
Yeah, I would recommend it. And think about the McMahon family while you watch it.
Okay.
Would Paul Levesque ever leave WWE? This is a man who's been with WWE since 1995. He's been with WWE longer than some of the people who are listening to this program right now. Longer than some of the people who are listening to this program have been alive. And there's the Stephanie factor as well, right? Like, if they were to get divorced, I really wonder what their conversations are like. As I've said elsewhere, I hope Paul Levesque writes an honest book someday. It would be so interesting.
His memoirs.
Yeah. But, Stephanie's not going to leave this company. Stephanie's not going to leave Dad. And I don't see them getting divorced or something like that. Who knows? I have no idea. I highly doubt that, But it's going to be, what are you going to do if you're Paul Levesque? Is there some way that he's going to redeem himself on the corporate level in time, maybe? And I don't know, if Vince were to die tomorrow, who would be in charge of creative? Maybe it would be Paul Levesque. Maybe it would be Bruce Pritchard. I guess it would ultimately be, I don't know whose decision that would ultimately be. I don't know if that would be Nick Khan's decision or whether it would be.
You know, that's in his will. That will be in his will.
Who's that? I bestow the head of creative upon.
Yeah.
Who knows? We would just be helpless to speculate. It's usually the case, though, if we think about the typical situation when you're in a job and you got promoted and promoted and promoted, and you were doing really well, and now now the project that you were working on for a long time had a perceived failure, and now people are making decisions that are really important to your project without you even knowing about it. In a typical situation at a job, you would probably not be long for that company. And if you're at a high enough level, there's probably other companies that would, you know, that you could offer your services to. But then again, this is pro wrestling, and I know you're in the media business, but where else is Paul Levesque going to work? You know, he's a pro wrestling guy.
Yeah, it's not like Stephanie, where I feel, and I've said this before on the show, that I feel like Stephanie, you could plug her in other companies, other non-wrestling sure. companies, like yeah, a sure. you know, media company or something like that. Yeah. But Triple H, I mean, it would just be wrestling. Like, if he ever did leave, you know, does he start his own company? Does he partner with someone? Partner with another resource with a lot of money, you know, maybe another billionaire, and they put something together. So
he would be foolish to do it with anything other than somebody who has a lot of experience dealing with sports and media properties. I mean, somebody like Mark Cuban, we're just pulling a name out of the sky. Somebody like Mark Cuban makes sense. The credibility and experience of TNA and people who have been involved with TNA in the past, not good enough. That's not going to go anywhere. I think we'd be foolish to invest in something like that. On the other hand, sort of a little bit separate from this, we have seen Shane McMahon, who seems to be an heir to this company, leave in 2010. And so it's not unprecedented that somebody who's a very close member of the McMahon family to just, you know, to go from being a high-level executive to being out of the company and never come back. Of course, Shane never got involved in the wrestling business, and Shane at least had ambitions, and he tried to get involved in media distribution in China, which doesn't seem to have gone well. And now he's got just recently he was announced to be, I think, some sort of EVP of Ideanomics, which no one can quite explain to me what they do. But but I don't see Paul Levesque doing things like that, you know. And if anybody's wondering, no, Stephanie and Triple H do not have the shares to perform a hostile takeover of Vince. Vince has 80% of the voting power, and Stephanie has a lot too. She has something like 5% of the voting power, which is more than anybody else. I think that's more than even Lindsdale Train, who's their biggest institutional investor. But no, Vince has the overwhelming majority of the voting power, and Vince, unless he sells a lot more of his shares, is never at risk of a hostile takeover.
All right, moving on to a little bit of AEW news, where we have a debut date for Roads to the Top, the reality show making a deep dive in the lives of Cody and Brandi Rhodes. It's going to debut September 29th on TNT after Dynamite. So much like Miz and Mrs., you know, getting that lead out from, well, the lead in from a wrestling program, so.
Right. This is sort of something that I mentioned a moment ago about part of the value of a wrestling show is how well that wrestling show or any show is able to promote viewership of other shows, is able to gather more viewership for that network or for that family of networks. And Raw has helped to do that for Miz and Mrs., which has done well in its most recent season. And AEW will try to do that for TNT by adding this reality show on Cody and Brandi, which starts a little over a month, and it's gonna get the lead in from Dynamite. So we will see the ratings for that too, and we will be watching closely.
Speaking of wrestling themed programming, Heels, which will be debuting on the Starz Network tonight, but it's actually available on the Starz app as of midnight last night. Well, midnight today. So you could actually watch it on the Starz app before it actually premieres. But yeah, Heels premieres tonight, and that is the drama series about two brothers pretty much running an independent wrestling promotion that their father owned. You know, and Stephen Amell stars in it. So
yeah, I haven't given a lot of thought to Heels, but it's worth mentioning that there's and Starz. I was thinking about who owns Starz, but Starz is owned by Lionsgate, which is not part of some larger media conglomerate like WarnerMedia or NBCU. So it's not like this is another synergy for AEW to drive more viewership to the WarnerMedia universe by including CM Punk. So CM Punk has some sort of small role in this Heels show. But it's not a benefit, I don't think, to Warner Media, unless Starz buys some ad time during AEW programs or something.
And I believe I did see, and I could be wrong, I saw an ad for it this week in some wrestling program. I just can't remember which one it was. Okay. Moving on to CM Punk. We have an interview CM Punk did, pretty much promoting heels. Mm-hmm. And you have the quotes here, so you want me to start with the one was that quote?
Yeah, he did an interview with Jason Agnew of, in my memory, Live Audio Wrestling fame, and who asked CM Punk about whether he was going to be at the United Center for AEW's Rampage show this coming Friday.
So he says, when was that, Punk said. Let me look at my calendar. When did you say it was? The 20th? I think I actually might be doing a screening. This isn't confirmed yet, so I probably shouldn't blast this out everywhere, but we're talking about doing a screening of the episode 3 of Heels at an AMC in Chicago, and that was one of the dates that had been proposed. So hope to see everyone there.
Yeah. So it sounds like he's going to be there, or he's playing coy. And then Tony Khan was on his favorite wrestling podcast, Busted Open Radio, again this week, where he said this.
Furthermore, we'll hear a little bit about what's coming on Rampage. It's going to be a huge card, and tonight we'll establish more of what's coming on the premiere of Rampage. Of course, I think everyone knows what to expect on the second episode of Rampage, which is titled The First Dance, and I expect the anticipation will continue to build.
Yes. Everyone knows what to expect was the phrase that people focused on there, as if everyone knows what to everyone knows to expect CM Punk, sort of the unsaid thing there. So I would be shocked if CM Punk is not on the show. It would be a huge detriment to their brand if CM Punk, if they go off the air at 11 o'clock and CM Punk has not appeared on screen. But I would bet a lot of money that he's going to be there. And he's going to do who knows what. It was asked of me on the TV ratings talk this past Thursday. What quarter, what segment, where would you place the CM Punk debut? I will ask you that, Chris Golo. If you were in charge, if you had to pick where on the show, where on Rampage, what quarter would you put CM Punk's debut on?
So, honestly, I would finish with it to keep a high-rated audience throughout the show.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. If you put him on first, people will tune out afterward. So I would put him on at the very end. So, I think that's all. What are we at here in terms of a time? We're at 107. We've been going a little bit over an hour lately, more like an hour 20. So now I have some questions for you, and we will now play. Are you ready, Chris Golo, to play
a game? I am ready.
That we call WrestleNomics Jeopardy. So we have a few questions here. First, ding. AEW's new TV partner in India, Eurosport, is owned by this parent company that will soon become the parent of Warner Media.
What is Discovery?
Discovery is the correct answer. Next, WWE returns value to its shareholders every quarter through a dividend, but in Q2, the company also spent $18.8 million in effort to increase the stock price by doing this.
What is a stock buyback?
Oh, very good. Next clue. In January, WWE gave financial guidance, projecting the company will generate $270 million to $300 million in this, WWE's favorite non-GAAP profit measure.
TV rates deal? I think I got this wrong.
That is incorrect. The correct answer, I'm sorry, the correct question, right? Anyway, the correct response is what is adjusted OIBDA? Adjusted OIBDA. Yeah.
They do like saying that word a lot.
Was the response we were looking for. Next, according to Nick Khan, viewership for this event increased 46% compared to the event of the same name in the prior year.
Was that... What was the... I want to say... I feel like it was not this quarter, so it wasn't the Money in the Bank. It has to be Backlash?
That is incorrect. The correct response is what is Money in the Bank?
Okay, so I just couldn't remember if it was a quarter two or a quarter three.
Cause the Backlash and Hell in a Cell had 20-some-odd percent increases, and Money in the Bank had a 40-some-odd percent increase. Next, among those who had more than a few matches in 2021, this WWE superstar has had the highest Google web search volume in each month year-to-date.
John Cena?
More than a few matches in 2021.
More than a few. Oh, so Roman Reigns?
Roman Reigns is the correct response. Final question. Answer, I mean. In July, WWE and Blumhouse Television announced a new limited scripted series is in the works. The series is going by this title.
Vince McMahon versus the United States of America.
That is correct. There we go. We've checked your reading comprehension. You performed admirably. You missed, let's see here. I gave you one.
Two, I missed a couple, three, yeah. Four, I missed Money in the Bank. And
six. And you got how many correct here? One, two. I was impressed with stock buyback program. Well done.
One, I two, missed adjusted EBITDA. See, I can't say it right.
Yes. We sort of gave you, I gave you a hint with the Roman Reigns Google website.
Yes.
So
I read that wrong. So
yes. So that is, I think, all. I did a TV ratings talk on Thursday. I think the response will be such that I should almost do it on Monday, but there probably will be no feasible way. But, maybe I'll do another one this Thursday. You can, get that content by going to WrestleNomics YouTube channel. Just, I don't know, search for WrestleNomics YouTube or search for WrestleNomics in YouTube. You know, YouTube is, I think, the third most used search engine, in the world. Do you know what the second most used search engine is in the world, Chris Colo?
Wow. Would it be Facebook? Because you could search anything on Facebook.
No, the correct response is Amazon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or I don't know if it's the third, but the three are obviously Google would be number one. But I think then it's YouTube and Amazon. Yeah. But yeah, maybe I'll do a live TV ratings discussion on Thursday. Look for ratings that will come out on Monday that are for Friday for Rampage and SmackDown. We will put to rest the controversy about what the real SmackDown rating is. And, we will be accepting apologies for, some nasty comments from teenagers on Twitter. But yeah, go ahead. You got plugs, Chris Gullo?
Yeah. Just me in general, Chris Gullo on, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. No bookings for the rest of the month, so just kind of taking it easy, getting caught up on some stuff, enjoying life a little bit. but we are recording our newest episode of Rediscovering the Indies, which you can find RTI Pod on Twitter, Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. We're recording our new episode this Saturday, and we're going to discuss the NWA title from the end of the partnership to TNA to the purchase of Billy Corgan. So get into some Bruce Tharp goodness. And it's an interesting story and how he had the NWA Houston footage and all this good stuff. And members were dropping like flies, and there's just a lot going on in the Bruce Tharp era. So we're going to dive deep in. And it's our 1 year anniversary rediscovering Indies. Oh, wow. As our first episode was the NWA title from 94 to 2002, so.
94 to 2002, so you covered, like, the Steve Corino and Mike Rapata.
We covered the day it was taken off of WCW television and now no longer affiliated with WCW up until the day it was on TNA television.
Credits. Our co-host and executive producer is me. Our co-host, you have a new title, Chris Gull. The Vice President of Content Distribution. That sounds pretty corporate and good, right?
Sounds very nice, yeah.
That sounds good. The Vice President of Content Distribution and co-host of this program is Chris Gull. Our WrestleNomics.com contributor is Jason Unpresser. Our technical consultant is Phil Chertok. Our creator and founder is Chris Gull. And we are a member of the Voices of Wrestling.
It's Chris Harrington, not Chris Gull.
Our creator is Chris Harrington, one Mookie Ghana, and our... You are a member of the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm Brandon Thurston. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston, at WrestleNomics. Go to WrestleNomics.com for WrestleNomics things. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gello.
And we'll talk to you next time.